Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Oh, morning star, oh, morning star, shine far bright across the light of
God. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The civil rights laws were not passed to allow those boys who identified as girls into the girls' locker room and to play on the girls' sports team. This is turning the civil rights laws upside down.
Abortion is not confined to the first trimester of the pregnancy. That extends to the entire length of the pregnancy and even when the child comes out.
If your pastor is already slipping and preaching and teaching and working in direct revelation into his sermons, it's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse.
If you want to see history through the eyes of the Lord and the things that matter to him and the things that don't, Revelation gives it to us.
While snow blowing our driveways, hardy Minnesotans love to listen to Issues Etc.
The headline in the New York Times is, "A QAnon digital soldier marches on undeterred by theories unraveling." Now, if you only read the headline, you would probably assume, based upon much of the media coverage of the conspiracy theory QAnon and its many adherents, that this is going to be about some sort of right-wing, Trump-supporting evangelical who is a QAnon leader or soldier. Well, it isn't. Not by a long shot. And kudos to the New York Times for breaking the mold of the narrative, as it is called nowadays, about QAnon. Maybe we need more stories examining people who buy into this theory who aren't the cardboard cutouts or the cookie cutter evangelicals that the mainstream press seem to be so concerned about. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 27th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about a New York Times story about a non-Christian QAnon leader with Terry Mattingly. A little later, Sherry Williams, author of a recent column for National Review Online titled "COVID-19 Has Made Human Trafficking of Children Worse." We'll talk about the impact of the pandemic on human trafficking. Dr. Kevin Golden, author of our Issues Etc. book of the month for January, Blessed Be His Name, will lead us into part three of our series on the sacred names of God. We'll talk about God's name, reputation, and honor, and then we'll review the movie Mulan with Pastor Ted Geese. Joining us to discuss this New York Times story about a non-Christian QAnon leader, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So was the whole QAnon story just a fad?
We don't know yet. I would say at this point that we could be playing, what's the old game, whack-a-mole right here, that this is something you strike down and it pops up in some other place. I think it's important to think of QAnon as kind of a political version of the whole late great planet Earth end times fad among a certain type of evangelical Christianity. It comes and goes. It emerges with new books and new movies and whatever, and churches argue about it, and some people think it explains everything. And then it kind of goes away for a couple years. But then we need to understand why a topic like that keeps coming back. Now, in the case of QAnon, the bigger issue here really is the subject of internet conspiracy theories. And then I would argue you will not be surprised by this one bit, since you heard me speak at that Issues Etc. conference a couple of years ago. I'm going to argue this is a stand-in for the role of social media, smartphones, and technology in the lives of too many Christians. The unexamined use of these technologies in many individuals' lives and in their homes, that that's the other topic here. And one of the reasons we're seeing what I think is the story as far as evangelicals go, and there's a lot more to QAnon than talking about evangelicals, and we should talk about that. But among evangelicals, among conservative Christians, the big story here is the latest evidence of a division between the leaders of evangelicalism as a movement and some of their followers, and the gap, in some cases, between people in pews versus the people in their pulpits. And there's a new study that's just come out on that from the folks at Lifeway that would also be interesting to talk about briefly.
So tell us about this, and I have to say, rather unexpected QAnon story in the New York Times.
Well, I mean, the minute I saw the headline, you know, I immediately thought, here we go again. But then when you read just the top section of the story and realize that this is a thoroughgoing New Yorker, I mean, this is a card-carrying actress with a union card, a Harvard graduate, a former student at the Dalton School, which is like the symbol of Manhattan establishment power. I mean, this is someone who was, you know, wrote satire at Harvard University on a staff that included Conan O'Brien. I mean, this is really interesting stuff that you're not expecting. At least I sure wasn't expecting it. How about you?
No, not at all.
So I was immediately intrigued, and I dug down in here and tried to find out, well, there's got to be some kind of religious worldview. As much ink has been thrown at the QAnon story about its links to evangelicalism and conservative Christianity, and the rioters were in some way linked to elements of evangelical power, you know, which you and I talked about the other day. I figured there has to be, at some point, the story has to address religion. And instead, we got this remarkable, for the Times, we got this remarkable summary paragraph. Let me just read part of it to our listeners. And what jumps out is missing. There is no question that QAnon, which began in 2017 with a series of anonymous posts on the 4chan online message board by Q, a person purporting to be a high-ranking government insider, has outgrown its roots on the far-right fringes. It is now a big tent conspiracy theory community that includes left-wing yoga moms, anti-lockdown libertarians, and Stop the Steal Trumpists. QAnon believers are young and old, male and female, educated and not. I mean, unless you want to assume at this point that right-wing fringes automatically means evangelicalism, which I don't think, based on the rest of the story, I don't think you can infer that from this article. The big subject here is, well, wasn't this supposed to be something that just rolled straight in out of a meeting of the Southern Baptist Convention? Or perhaps Wilder, the Assemblies of God, or something like that? There's nothing about this woman's religious beliefs or anything in this piece. It's an interesting piece, the way it's constructed. It has about maybe 1,000-something words of type about her, and then the entire rest of the piece are huge clouds of images of her online work, because this is the whole point, is that she is a person with the talent to recognize what will grab people, either as funny or distressing or whatever, and put it into memes that go out on the internet and grab traffic on Facebook, Twitter, you know, and other forms of social media. But I decided I would try to dig up something on her. And it turns out she describes herself in terms that anyone who's been around for a couple of decades would immediately recognize as basically New Age. her actual, when she describes her job, or at least how she described her job before QAnon, she was, you paid her. She was available for hire as a healer, teacher, and author, and her other name for herself, a New York City mystic. And in an interview at the Fangirl Nation, and this had nothing to do with QAnon, it had to do with her work in entertainment, she said, "My parents raised me as a theosophist. I don't ascribe to any creed these days, but appreciate the theosophical perspective." And she then says, "I basically have been a mystic my entire life." Well, that's about as far from doctrinaire Christianity or doctrinaire anything as you could get. Theosophist would be kind of the old age that preceded the new age. So, fascinating article. I would recommend that people read it. And remember that, I mean, you have to picture, this is a woman creating social media that the statistics would show significant numbers of evangelical Christians are forwarding her work, passing her work around, maybe even arguing with their pastors about her work. And what matters is not that she's part of QAnon or a supporter of QAnon, but that they have come to agree with her after consuming oceans of digital material about this worldview. And there's the story from my perspective.
Does the New York Times piece contain any adjectives that would kind of tip its hand that they believe they're dealing with an outlier here, like atypical QAnon supporter, any of that kind of stuff?
Other than this thing about it began with far-right roots, something, by the way, I would not deny, based on the reading I've done, especially the, for the most part, excellent issue of The Atlantic that was dedicated to the subject. I don't think there's any question that this begins out in right-wing conspiracy land. And as much as I hesitate to go there, and I don't want to get locked in on this, the arguments about QAnon in the context of conservative Christianity, there's no way around the fact that this returns us to how divisive the Trump era was in many churches. I mean, and this gets into a lot of subjects that Get Religion has written many, many posts about and that you and I have talked about. But the big one is there distinctly was a difference, which the press has never wanted to talk about openly. There was a distinct difference between the people who supported Donald Trump in the primaries versus the people who then felt reluctantly or however, they felt they had to vote for him in the general election in 2016. That division and that split never really has been examined greatly by the press. I have recommended several times that people seek out a book on that topic called Alienated America by Timothy Carney of the Washington Examiner, because I think, once again, that's another story linked to this. If you're looking for evangelicals or people who call themselves evangelicals who are closely attached to QAnon and to the world of conspiracy theories at their most intense levels, I think you're going to find yourself finding divisions similar to that between, say, pastors or other religious people who may have voted for Donald Trump and may support a lot of what he did versus the people who embraced him early on as a rebellion against the Republican Party establishment. So, yes, this is also a division inside the Republican Party establishment, which should be visible to anyone. And about 2 weeks ago, I wrote a piece at Get Religion. It was a think piece on January 16 called Thinking with Bob Dylan, sort of. Everything is broken in the three Americas of 2021. The website Axios, an online newsletter, which I recommend, don't agree with them on everything, but I recommend this site. Axios ran a very interesting piece the other day that stress that we, to some degree, we live in two Americas, but at this moment in political and cultural life, we currently live in three Americas. And one America is kind of the blue zip code establishment of big tech, the modern Democratic Party, academia, Hollywood, you know, and a host of other major figures that are culturally identified as liberal, even though in many cases they no longer are liberal on issues such as the First Amendment or whatever. But instead of saying that it was half of America versus the other half, they point out the increasing evidence that there are now two Americas in the red zip codes, in the more conservative sections of America, and that that division comes down to traditional conservatives, Republicans, cultural conservatives, most of the religious right versus Trump. And the other day, the announcement that Donald Trump was seriously considering forming a Patriots Party, an actual third party, in an active attempt to split the Republican Party, that would be the coup de grace. That this is affecting everything from Fox News ratings to what's happening in churches and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a New York Times story on a non-Christian QAnon leader. We'll discuss conspiracy theories as a much bigger American problem after this. You could win recordings of all 10 Making the Case conferences and recordings of more than 50 hymns featuring the Lutheran Public Radio Choir. Here's how. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. with Apple Podcasts. Copy and paste the text of your review and send it to talkback@issuesetc.org. We'll announce the winners on February 1st. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. with Apple Podcasts. And send your review to talkback@issuesetc.org.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Congratulations to Ad Crusum on its first brick and mortar shop. Ad Crusum is a Christian greeting card, jewelry, art, gift, and housewares company with beautiful merchandise for the home and church. Learn more at adcrusum.com. That's adcrusum.com. We're discussing a New York Times story about a non-Christian QAnon leader with Terry Mattingly of Get Religion. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. So, Terry, The easy thing, I would say the lazy thing, because I think one of the biggest problems in journalism today is laziness, not bias. I think it's, there are two problems there. The easy thing would be just to focus on QAnon as the, what, the conspiracy theory du jour. But do you think that journalism ought to be looking into the fact that we, I think I've heard you say before, we're living kind of in an era of conspiracy theories?
Well, they certainly should be interested in it because it's affecting the bottom line for a lot of newsrooms as well. Basically, the newsrooms are trying to figure out how to survive in a digital information ecostructure in which everybody and their dog has a keyboard and can publish whatever they want. And this creates everything from the far, far reaches of the dark web, where you have all kinds of truly scary stuff going on. And then it could be seen in the warfare between big tech and something like Parlay, an attempt to create a conservative alternative to Twitter. Then you can see it in the ongoing battles of newsrooms to decide what their own staff should or shouldn't say on Twitter and in other social media. And we occasionally see journalists kind of just slide off the edge and go rogue in their comments about the very people they're covering. So you have this entire niche information silos world, and it's affecting these newsrooms like crazy. Now, I'm going to jump over immediately and say it's also affecting pastors and churches and denominations like crazy. We live in the world of non-denominationalism, an increasing number of kind of independent churches in which the, to quote a famous cartoon strip from Peanuts, where Sally writes a paper on church history and begins it by saying, my pastor was born in 1950, and mentions when her pastor was born. That's the beginning of church history. Well, that's the way a lot of evangelical and charismatic life in particular function. Everything is as recent as their pastor or whoever is leading the small group they go to, or, crucial point, whoever is writing that website that they are absolutely sure is nailing down everything from parenting to presidential politics. And I remind you of an anecdote. My own priest, right before COVID hit, My priest went to Russia and spent several days, and he asked all of the priests that he met, what is the number one issue shaping your ministry right now? And all of them except one said, smartphones. Smartphones are affecting my ministry more than anything else. And of course, they don't mean the physical object. They mean the information channels and the influences and the rumors and the unattributed information, and yes, the conspiracy theories flowing through those phones. A friend of mine, a former newspaper editor in Nigeria, I was exchanging emails with him right about that time, and I told him about this comment from my priest after he returned from Russia. And he said, if you talk to pastors in Nigeria and ask them what's the number one thing affecting their ministry, they will say smartphones. So what's my point here? I'm saying that your question about journalism is essentially a question about how people get the information that they live by, argue about, fight over, etc., in their lives right now. Long ago at Denver Theological Seminary in the early 90s, right before the birth of the internet, working with the late and very great teacher of preaching, Haddon Robinson, I came up with three questions that I used to define discipleship for these future pastors who were in my class on apologetics in the media age. And I just improvised it one day. They were asking me, well, you know, why are we talking about the media so much? And I finally said, ask these three questions about the people in your pews and the people you're trying to reach. How do they spend their time? How do they spend their money? And where do they get their information on the questions that matter to them the most? I jokingly said at that time that if you can answer those three questions today without hitting the mass media, you have a promising ministry to the Amish. That was 30 years ago, Todd. I mean, how many screens were in a home then? Well, 3-4 TVs. How many screens are in a home now? How many different doorways? These screens are not windows into the home. They're doors for information, for ideas, for alternative leaders. And when we start looking at things like this Lifeway study, in which basically half of American Protestant pastors say that they have issues with conspiracy theories among their own people. Now, they're not saying that their church has been dominated by them, but they're hearing about them. This is a factor in their church. I'm saying that the talk about conspiracy theories is simply another angle on this wider subject of whether or not religious groups want to deal with the changes that the media, and specifically digital internet silo niche media, is having on the lives of their people. And you would think journalists would be interested in this because it's the same thing that's tearing journalism to shreds right now.
With just a couple minutes here, you also wanted to talk about Sunday school versus F-bombs?
Well, we talked, that was something you chuckled at the other day when we were talking about it. And this, I'm referring to the riots, of course, and I'm talking about the people that actually crashed through the doors and windows and went inside the Capitol. And these were supposed to be, you know, linked to institutions of evangelical power. Yet at the same time, if you watch the tapes, obviously, you've got some people playing contemporary Christian music out on the steps, and you've got obvious evangelical and Christian symbolism going on. But that's not the dominant mood. If you listened, you have all these people screaming F-bombs and cursing and calling out that they need to hang Mike Pence, you know, and all of these other things. And later, one particular piece of footage was particularly distressing. And that was where you had the F-bomb hurlers, finally, they take the U.S. Senate. And these are the very people who have been breaking the windows, breaking down the doors, injuring police officers. I don't know if anybody is in there that took part in the beating of a police officer to death. But when they got there, including the crazy guy with the white supremacist tattoos who calls himself a shaman with the guy with the horns on his head, they take them off, and what do? Well, it's on tape. They prayed, and their prayers sounded pretty normal in terms of what you would hear in a typical evangelical church, except that if you listened carefully, they are, in effect, worshiping politics. And God is on their side because God backs their political actions and their political worldview and even their attack on the Capitol. Sooner or later, we're going to get a transcript of that out there. And Todd, that will be very scary reading. How do the Sunday school people, if that's who these are, end up with the F-bomb hurlers? To some degree, they're separate groups of people, separate choirs. But I don't think there's any question that when you're looking at QAnon and you're looking at these conspiracy theories, that there is some overlap. And pastors and denominational leaders and seminary leaders and a whole lot of other people are going to have to face this reality sooner or later.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overbee Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for your time.
Glad to be here.
Sherry Williams will be with us on the other side of the break. She has written an interesting article for National Review Online titled COVID-19 Has Made Human Trafficking of Children Worse. We'll talk about the impact of the pandemic on human trafficking.
Fornication, that is, sexual intercourse between persons not married to each other, is strictly forbidden by the scriptures. St. Paul sternly warned the Corinthians, "Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality will inherit the kingdom of God." Thus wrote David Ramirez in his article, "Do Not Be Deceived," in the January issue of the Lutheran Witness, Chaste and Decent Life. To read the entire issue on how to live a chaste and decent life, pick up your copy of the Lutheran Witness today, cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our trek through Matthew with Faithful and Unfaithful Servants, Parable of the Ten Virgins, Parable of the Talents, Parts 1 and 2, and Last Judgment, Part 1. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
In a city known for the latest in songwriting and the performance of music, we offer the sweet sound of the timeless gospel and the historic liturgy in worship. Redeemer Lutheran Church in Nashville, Tennessee, is a place where God's people receive the gifts of Christ and sing praises with angels and archangels and all the company of heaven. If you are vacationing in Music City or are moving to the area, please join us for divine service at 10:30. Find out more at redeemernashville.org.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
When Martin Luther preached the dedication for the Torgau Church, he asserted that nothing else happened in this house but that our dear Lord speak to us and we respond in prayer, thanksgiving, and praise.
Issues, Etc. guest Dr. John Pless.
The same could be said of Concordia Theological Seminary. This is a place where our Lord speaks to us through His Word, and we respond in joyful and thankful confession. We therefore invite you to visit our campus, where the Word of Christ dwells among us richly.
Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Forming servants in Jesus Christ to teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, ctsfw.edu or 1-800-481-2155.